I'm learning something very interesting about pee drinking or urine therapy, an ancient Ayurvedic custom. What are its benefits? Why would anybody want to do something like that? Why go to the trouble? Because it is a certain amount of trouble to change your way of life, especially if you obsess over it like I do. Well, because I want to prevent my cramping feet from cramping up on me in the middle of the night when I'm sleeping, regardless of the amount of stress I induce on my feet by spending too much time in the supermarkets, pushing a heavy shopping cart around. I can wear a back brace to prevent back trouble, but I cannot prevent my feet from cramping up in the middle of the night in the deepest of sleep unless I drink my pee. Now, besides that benefit, preventing that from happening, there's other benefits such as moderation in what we consume, what we eat and drink. If you drink your pee all day and all night, all of it, it's very hard to overdo the consumption of anything else. And pee can't hurt us. It comes from ourself. The only thing that hurts us is when we eat too much rich diet. In fact, I noticed that I can get a head cold from too much rich diet now that I'm drinking my pee. So I include ginger in it, and that prevents that from happening. I include citric acid powder because I don't want to make my knuckles raw and waxy from juicing too many lemons. You know, that's all lemons have. They don't have a whole lot of vitamin C. Everybody likes to tout the vitamin C content of lemons. But if you actually look it up, instead of touting that wise aphorism, which is not so wise because we don't bother to double check what we hear people say, we just assume it's true because everybody says it's true. But it turns out that there's more vitamin C in a bowl full of mung bean sprouts or bell pepper, raw bell pepper, than there is in lemons. It's mostly citric acid that's in lemons. And citric acid powder is used as a preservative when you're canning fruits and vegetables. If it doesn't have enough acidity, the fruit or vegetable does not have enough acidity, you add citric acid. And the easiest way to do that without adding volume to the food is to buy citric acid powder. It's sold in the aisles of foodstuffs for kosher kitchens, if you're keeping kosher. So it's a very common item, and you can buy it on Amazon very cheap, you know, 5 pounds for just, you know, a few bucks. So I add that's the first most important thing to add to pee, because pee is very alkaline, and it fizzies. It brings out the bicarbonation, comes to the top and surfaces when you add citric acid powder. Even more fizzy occurs if, in addition to citric acid powder, you add sugar. And it has to be raw sugar. I found out turbinado, raw sugar. Anything else is disgusting for the pee to be tasty. So I'm basically making lemonade out of it, and sometimes I add ginger if I start getting the sniffles. And now I'm starting to add diatomaceous earth food grade powder in case I have any parasites in my body, which I know I have, and maybe they're in the pee, so I'm reconsuming it. You never know. But if I have the sugar and the citric acid powder, that alone is enough. If I have enough of each of those two ingredients, that alone is enough to drink my pee and get it down and enjoy it down the whole amount. Now, you have to drink it raw, the pee. You cannot freeze it, refrigerate it, cook it, heat it. And you have to take it within, at the most, an hour's time. But a half hour, preferably, and right away is the best. Because pee does go bad, in the sense that bacteria and yeast and mold in the environment gets in there, and they go, wow, that's luscious. And they start procreating like crazy, or asymptotic, or however they multiply, and you've got yourself a consumption of an object, which of a bodily byproduct, which can actually make you sick if it's not fresh, because pee is sterile when it comes from the bladder. At least it doesn't have any bacteria. I'm not sure about the parasite part. In any case, what else is it good for besides suppressing a neurological disorder, which I possess now, that's got increasingly worse over the decades? It's very painful to have my feet cramp up and lock in a curl position. The muscles that are spasming injure themselves. It takes days for them to heal at my age. And you can't walk when that happens. I'm in the shopping for food, spending many hours a day doing it sometimes, like more than 12 hours. Well, some of the time subtracted is driving on the road, but be that as it may, it's pretty bad. since I depend on my feet, I can use an electric cart, but it takes longer and it's kind of difficult to maneuver sometimes without bumping into people pulling a shopping cart behind you while you maneuver an electric cart. Anyway, what else is it good for? Well, I'm realizing now, Charlie Lutz used to say during lectures sometimes that we Westerners, consume too much protein. We obsess over the consumption of protein. And the Meat Council sells meat by claiming we need to eat lots of protein. Turns out we're eating more protein than we actually need. In fact, there's a running joke that has yet to stop being a joke used in various movies and TV shows. It was used as far back as the Lucille Ball show, when live television was all the rage. And that's like 70 years ago, or 60, I don't know. It was a long time ago. And there's an episode there you might see once in a while re-aired on broadcast TV. Or if you buy a set of Lucille Ball, I Love Lucy episodes. Yeah, they're in Italy. They're with their best friends, their neighbors. I forget Ethel and I forget the name of the guy, the husband. But they have a couple they're friends with who are their neighbors. And so the foursome goes to Italy. And they get on a commuter train, and the gag is they can't fit in the bench seat. A bench seat that was designed, I think, for five Italians to sit in, if I'm not mistaken. And the four Americans cannot fit their butts in that bench seat because their butts are too big. And I don't recall the movie. It might have been with Ethan Hawke and Julie Dupree, that French gal who sometimes produces but also acts, Meet You at Sunset or Meet You at Sunrise or Again at Sunrise. It's a series of movies. I can't remember if it's that one or some other movie, but that gag was used in modern times. So I've seen that gag used twice. So it's well known Americans are fat, basically, and Europeans are not. And it must be the Meat Council because they're pushing protein, animal protein, like crazy. And, of course, vegans are well aware of this. That's the only reason why I know about it. Pay attention to these things. That we eat too much protein and our meat industry is subsidized. So we get various diseases associated with the overconsumption of beef that other times... 100 years ago, we did not have that problem because it was not subsidized by our government. A lot of industries, the orange industry is subsidized. The farmers, the orange farmers, are subsidized to plow their oranges under the ground and destroy a large part of their crop in order to keep the prices up. They're actually subsidized to do that. So there's a lot of government subsidies causing a lot of weird behavior. That doesn't make any sense from a humanitarian point of view. Food, why would you want to destroy the very food you went to the trouble and expense to create, you know, to help Mother Nature create? Why would you do that? Because you can, because it's profitable. And meat is heavily subsidized. My grandma, she was born around, I want to say... the 1890s, I think. Might have been the 1880s. Her parents, when she was living in a little shtetl in Russia called Padachi, because Padachi, but they renamed the everybody in the town who lived in that town Gorelick. And so if you meet somebody called Gorelick, you know they're from Padachi, Russia, because it's outside of Minsk, Minskabednya. It's because the town burned down twice. And they used buckets, little thimbles of water to try to put the... But, you know, the whole place was little shacks. It was a shanty town, basically. It all burned down twice. But it was a tourist trap. The people from Minsk would come in the summertime to fatten up for the winter, because of all the fresh fruit and fresh fish in the streams nearby. They were known for their orchards. My grandma was the cowgirl. She took the cows out to pasture and brought them in at night, and she drank and washed her face in the milk, and it made her complexion beautiful. But her parents were the only ones who got the chance to eat meat once a week on Shabbos, if they were lucky. And only a small piece at that. The children all slept on wooden benches, and the parents got to sleep in the feather bed, because there was only one bed in the house. So they were very poor, and it shows how scarce meat can be. The Hunza Cuts living up in the Himalayas, or the foothills of the Himalayas, they don't get much meat in their diet, so they eat lots of dairy. And that's what... I can't remember if my grandmother ever said she had chickens, but they had a lot of dairy, more than they needed, and fish and fruits. Anyway, so meat, under normal conditions, wherein there is no government subsidy to support the meat industry, meat usually becomes very scarce. It's not like it is today, ubiquitous. We literally are swimming in the stuff. We have so much of it. And we have, according to vegan studies, we have a lot of diseases that are based on excessive consumption of meat eating that was never prevalent prior to a century ago. We had other problems, you know. Children died, sometimes of starvation. But you can die of starvation regardless of how much meat you consume. Because starvation is across the board. Kwashiorkor is not a protein deficiency as it is often touted because of the strength of the meat union. It is simply a starvation disease of calories. You will get kwashiorkor simply from not eating enough calories. This is a vegan study. It has nothing to do with the specific depravity of not getting enough meat in your diet. That is bullshit. But hey, don't take it from me. Look it up yourself. Anyway, so what else is pea drinking good for? Well, it moderates my consumption of protein because it's rich in protein. It's full of urea. And it turns out we really don't need much protein. The problem is we've got this gluttonous sensory device in our brain that we've hooked into. Now that we can eat whatever we want in any consumption quantity that we want, and so we just go hog wild. So it's not merely the Meat Council's fault for encouraging us to overconsume animal protein. It's our own fault mostly, and they're taking advantage of our weakness for wanting to eat lots of animal protein. We're suckers for it, and they take advantage of that vulnerability. Because it hits some center in the brain that we go, oh, wow, I feel really good. I eat all this animal protein. So how can the Animal Meat Council be wrong, you know, because I feel so good eating it? Well, you get a lot of diseases, you know, heart ailments, cardiovascular problems, obesity, all kinds of problems from the overconsumption of animal foods. And oddly enough, we are an animal. We're a mammal. Our body is, at any rate. And pea is a byproduct. It's a food byproduct of the animal. They sell cow urine in India in glass bottles. But, you know, Ayurveda is probably the only modern-day medical practice that has this in its legacy that we're familiar with. The Romans drank their pee, but we're not familiar with that part of their culture. Even though we like to say, ooh, we're Romanesque, or more so than we're not like the Greeks. Some of us like to think we're more Grecian, but for the most part, our government and whatnot is Roman-based, but we don't think about them having drunk their pee. But pee drinking, especially if you take it far enough, there's a lot of nitrogen in pee in the form of urea. And wouldn't you know it, it prevents a person from overconsumption of protein. Can you beat that? So I'm finding myself not eating a whole lot of protein in my diet anymore. You know, like nut butter. I do drink a little bit of soy milk. But I don't... oh, yeah, and soy Rizzo. That is made from textured soy protein. I don't really have much stomach for it. It tastes great. You know, they spice it up. But I really can't consume a whole lot of it. One little morsel, you know, one little bite, a mouthful, or less than a mouthful. I have a hard time chewing. That stuff is pretty chewy. So, I mean, potatoes and soy milk, and only a little bit of that in some vegetable soup, you know, some butternut squash soup. I mean, one day I went without eating entirely, or I think I might have had a few dates. I mean, I'm really not eating a whole lot of food. It's amazing. Just, and so, I haven't drunk, I'm still mixing it up here. It takes a while to dissolve the sugar, but it does have to be raw sugar. Anything else, it makes the pee disgusting. Anything else, because it's cooked. The sugar literally has to be raw, just like the pea is raw. Now, if it's not rich in carbohydrates like ginger and citric acid powder, it's okay. It can be a cooked product. But if it's a carbohydrate, it has to be raw. So if I was using honey, I'd have to use raw honey. And that's pretty hard to come by when you're not living on the islands of Hawaii. They have their own production of raw honey that they don't export. They consume it locally. And it's pretty good stuff. And you can buy it in huge volumes in any store, corner store, liquor store, whatever. They've got raw honey. It's their own product, and they're proud of it that they don't import something, because they import everything else, and it's skyrocket prices. Anywho, so that's what else pee drinking is good for, is the minimization of our consumption of protein in general, and definitely in relationship to animal protein in particular, because urea is an animal byproduct of our body. And it satisfies that center in the brain that wants to eat protein of any sort so well that we don't eat more protein than we actually need. And whether or not our body is converting some of that urea back into protein when we reconsume our urine, I don't know. All I can say is I did... When I first started experimenting with this over a decade ago, I noticed that my pee was less yellow the second time around in the morning when I drank it twice. I wasn't drinking it all day long most of the time at that time. I was just drinking it once a day in the morning when I arose from sleep, but sometimes twice. And I noticed that my urine was higher volume, but not too much, because I got to collect it the second time, but it was distinctly more clear, more so than just by dilution alone, by volume, increase of volume alone. And I just wondered, where did all that urea go to? My body must have converted it because of the biofeedback technique, which urine drinking is. It's literally biofeedback. And your system becomes more efficient without having to run 20 miles a day to do it, like a runner will do. It's the lazy way to create an efficient metabolic rate if you decide to drink your pee all day long. Well, it's about time for me to consume mine, because I've been talking now for 20 minutes, and so my pee is 20 minutes old. I like to get it under the half-hour mark. Anyway, enough said, I think. Wouldn't you know? Wouldn't you think?